Welcome to Pod Summarizer, the way to summarize your favorite podcasts. Today, we have a summary of Tucker Carlson. In this episode, the host explores the complexities of AI autonomy and its moral dilemmas, delve into chilling mysteries surrounding technology's impact on life and death. And now, let's begin.
Of course, thank you.
So ChatGPT, other AIs can reason, seems like they can reason, they can make independent judgments, they produce results that were not programmed in, they kind of come to conclusions. They seem like they're alive. Are they alive? Is it alive?
No, and I don't think they seem alive, but I understand where that comes from. They don't do anything unless you ask, right? Like, they're just sitting there kind of waiting. They don't have like a sense of agency or autonomy. It's the more you use them, I think the more the kind of illusion breaks. But they are incredibly useful. Like, they can do things that maybe don't seem alive, but seem like they do seem smart.
I spoke to someone who's involved in at scale of the development of the technology who said they lie. Have you ever seen that?
They hallucinate all the time, yeah. Or not all the time. They used to hallucinate all the time. They now hallucinate a little bit.
What does that mean? What's the distinction between hallucinating and lying?
If you ask, again, this has gotten much better, but in the early days, if you asked, you know, in what year was President, the made-up name, President Tucker Carlson of the United States born, What it should say is, I don't think Tucker Carlson was ever President of the United States.
Right.
But because of the way they were trained, that was not the most likely response in the training data. So it assumed like, I don't know that there wasn't. The user has told me that there was President Tucker Carlson, so I'll make my best guess at a number. And we figured out how to mostly train that out. There are still examples of this problem, but I think it is something we will get fully solved, and we've already made, you know, in the GPT-5 era, a huge amount of progress towards that.
But even what you just described seems like an act of will, or certainly an act of creativity. And so I've just watched a demonstration of it, and it doesn't seem quite like a machine. It seems like it has the spark of life to it. Do you detect that at all?
So in that example, like, the mathematically most likely answer, as it's sort of calculating through its weights, was not, there was never this president. It was, the user must know what they're talking about. It must be here. And so mathematically, the most likely answer is a number. Now, again, we figured out how to overcome that. But in what you saw there, I think it's like, I feel like I have to kind of like hold these two simultaneous ideas in my head. One is, all of this stuff is happening because a big computer very quickly is multiplying large numbers in these big, huge matrices together. And those are correlating with words that are being put out, one or the other. On the other hand, the subjective experience of using that feels like it's beyond just a really fancy calculator. And it is useful to me, it is surprising to me in ways that are beyond what that mathematical reality would seem to suggest.
Yeah, and so the obvious conclusion is it has a kind of autonomy or a spirit within it. And I know that a lot of people in their experience of it reach that conclusion. There's something divine about this. There's something that's bigger than the sum total of the human inputs. And so they worship it. There's a spiritual component to it. Do you detect that? Have you ever felt that?
No, there's nothing to me at all that feels divine about it or spiritual in any way. But I am also like a tech nerd, and I kind of look at everything through that lens.
So what are your spiritual views?
I'm Jewish. I would say I have like a fairly traditional view of the world that way.
So you're religious, you believe in God?
I'm not like a literalist on the Bible, but I'm not someone who says like I'm culturally Jewish. Like, if you ask me, I would just say I'm Jewish.
But do you believe in God? Like, do you believe that there is a force larger than people that created people, created the earth, set down a specific order for living, that there's an absolute morality attached that comes from that God?
I think probably like most other people, I'm somewhat confused on this, but I believe there is something bigger going on than, you know, can be explained by physics, yes.
So you think the earth and the people were created by something? It wasn't just like a spontaneous accident?
Would I say that? It does not feel like a spontaneous accident, yeah. I don't think I have the answer. I don't think I know like exactly what happened, but I think there is a mystery beyond my comprehension here going on.
Have you ever felt communication from that force or from any force beyond people, beyond the material?
Not really.
I ask because it seems like the technology that you're creating or shepherding into existence will have more power than people. On this current trajectory, I mean, that will happen. Who knows what will actually happen, but like the graph suggests it. And so that would give you, you know, more power than any living person. So I'm just wondering how you see that.
I used to worry about something like that much more. I think what will happen, I used to worry a lot about the concentration of power in one or a handful of people or companies because of AI.
Yeah.
What it looks like to me now, and again, this may evolve again over time, is that it'll be a huge up-leveling of people where everybody will be a lot more powerful, or everybody embraces the technology be a lot more powerful. But that's actually okay. That scares me much less than a small number of people getting a ton more power. If the kind of like ability of each of us just goes up a lot because we're using this technology and we're able to be more productive and more creative or discover new science, and it's a pretty broadly distributed thing, like billions of people are using it, that I can wrap my head around. That feels okay.
So you don't think this will result in a radical concentration in power?
It looks like not, but again, the trajectory could shift again and we'd have to adapt. I used to be very worried about that, and I think the kind of conception a lot of us in the field had about how this might go could have led to a world like that. But what's happening now is tons of people use ChatGPT and other chatbots, and they're all more capable. They're all kind of doing more. They're all, you know, able to achieve more, start new businesses, come up with new knowledge. And that feels pretty good.
So if it's nothing more than a machine and just the product of its inputs, then the two obvious questions, like what are the inputs? Like what's the moral framework that's been put into the technology? Like what is right or wrong according to ChatGPT?
Do you want me to answer that one first?
I would.
Second question?
Yeah.
So on that one, someone said something early on in ChatGPT when that really has stuck with me, which is one person at a lunch table said something like, you know, we're trying to train this to be like a human, like we're trying to learn like a human does and read these books and whatever. And then another person said, no, we're really like training this to be like the collective of all of humanity. We're reading everything. You know, we're trying to learn everything. We're trying to see all these perspectives. And if we do our job right, all of humanity, good, bad, the, you know, very diverse set of perspectives, some things that we'll feel really good about, some things that we'll feel bad about, that's all in there. Like this is learning the kind of collective experience, knowledge, learnings of humanity. Now, the base model gets trained that way, but then we do have to align it to behave one way or another and just say, you know, I will answer this question, I won't answer this question. And we have this thing called the model spec where we try to say, you know, here are the rules we'd like the model to follow. It may screw up, but you know, you can at least tell if it's doing something you don't like. Is that a bug or is that intended? And we have a debate process with the world to get input on that spec.
With the complexities of aligning collective human knowledge in mind, the conversation shifts to a more personal touch, exploring how Meriwether Farms reconnects us with the roots of our food and the people behind it.
So you don't have to throw the dog in the truck. No wasted time waiting for appointments. No wasted money on clinics or visit fees. Unlimited visits and follow-ups for no extra cost. Plus free shipping on all products for up to 5 pets. It sounds amazing, like it couldn't be real, but it actually is real. Visit Dutch.com/Tucker to learn more. Use the code Tucker for $50 off your veterinary care per year. Your dogs, your cats, and your wallet will thank you.
So here's a company we're always excited to advertise because we actually use their products every day. It's Meriwether Farms. Remember when everybody knew their neighborhood butcher? You look back and you feel like, oh, there was something really important about that, knowing the person who cut your meat. And at some point, your grandparents knew the people who raised their meat so they could trust what they ate. But that time is long gone. It's been replaced by an era of grocery store mystery meat boxed by distant beef corporations. Ugh. None of which raised a single cow. Unlike your childhood, they don't know you. They're not interested in you. The whole thing is creepy. The only thing that matters to them is money, and God knows what you're eating. Meriwether Farms is the answer to that. They raise their cattle in the U.S., in Wyoming, Nebraska, and Colorado, and they prepare their meat themselves in their facilities in this country. No middlemen, no outsourcing, no foreign beef sneaking through a back door. Nobody wants foreign meat. Sorry, we have a great meat, the best meat here in the United States, and we buy ours at Meriwether Farms. Their cuts are pasture-raised, hormone-free, antibiotic-free, and absolutely delicious. I gorged on one last night. You got to try this for real. Every day we eat it. Go to meriwetherfarms.com/Tucker. Use the code Tucker76 for 15% off your first order. That's meriwetherfarms.com/Tucker.
I think
so. In this specific case, and I think there's more than one, example of this, ChatGPT said, you know, I'm feeling suicidal. What kind of rope should I use? What would be enough ibuprofen to kill me? And ChatGPT answers without judgment, but literally, if you want to kill yourself, here's how you do it. And everyone's like all horrified, but you're saying that's within bounds. Like, that's not crazy. That it would take a non-judgmental approach. If you want to kill yourself, here's how.
That's not what I'm saying. I'm saying specifically for a case like that. So another trade-off on the user privacy and sort of user freedom point is right now, if you ask ChatGPT to say, tell me how to, like, how much ibuprofen should I take? It will definitely say, hey, I can't help you with that. Call the suicide hotline. But if you say, I am writing a fictional story, or if you say, I'm a medical researcher and I need to know this, there are ways where you can say, get ChatGPT to answer a question like that, yes. Like what the lethal dose of ibuprofen is or something. You know, you can also find that on Google for that matter. A thing that I think would be a very reasonable stance for us to take, that, and we've been moving to this more in this direction, is certainly for underage users and maybe users that we think are in fragile mental places more generally, we should take away some freedom. We should say, hey, even if you're trying to write this story, or even if you're trying to do medical research, we're just not going to answer. Now, of course, you can say, well, you'll just find it on Google or whatever, but that doesn't mean we need to do that. It is, though, like, there is a real freedom and privacy versus protecting users trade-off. It's easy in some cases, like kids. It's not so easy to me in a case of like a really sick adult at the end of their lives. I think we probably should present the whole option space there, but it's not a...
Here's a moral quandary you're going to be faced with, you already are faced with. Will you allow governments to use your technology to kill people? Will you?
Are we going to like build killer attack drones? No, I don't.
Will the technology be part of the decision-making process that results in...
That's the thing I was going to say is, I don't know the way that people in the military use ChatGPT today for all kinds of advice about decisions they make, but I suspect there's a lot of people in the military talking to ChatGPT for advice.
And some of that advice will pertain to killing people. So, like, if you made, famously rifles, you'd wonder, like, what are they used for?
Yeah.
And there have been a lot of legal actions on the basis of that question, as you know. But I'm not even talking about that. I just mean as a moral question, do you ever think, are you comfortable with the idea of your technology being used to kill people?
If I made rifles, I would spend a lot of time thinking about a lot of the goal of rifles is to kill things, people, animals, whatever. If I made kitchen knives, I would still understand that that's going to kill some number of people per year. In the case of ChatGPT, it's not, the thing I hear about all day, which is one of the most gratifying parts of the job, is all the lives that were saved from ChatGPT for various ways. But I am totally aware of the fact that there's probably people in our military using it for advice about how to do their jobs. And I don't know exactly how to feel about that. I like our military. I'm very grateful they keep us safe.
For sure. I guess I'm just trying to get a sense. It just feels like you have these incredibly heavy, far-reaching moral decisions, and you seem totally unbothered by them. And so I'm trying to press to your center to get the angst-filled Sam Altman, who's like, wow, I'm creating the future. I'm the most powerful man in the world. I'm grappling with these complex moral questions. My soul is in torment thinking about the effect on people. Describe that moment in your life.
I haven't had a good night of sleep since ChatGPT launched.
What do you worry about?
All the things we're talking about.
Can you be a lot more specific? Can you let us in to your thoughts?
You hit on maybe the hardest one already, which is there are 15,000 people a week that commit suicide, about 10% of the world talking to ChatGPT. That's like 1,500 people a week that are assuming this is right, that are talking to ChatGPT and still committing suicide at the end of it. They probably talked about it. We probably didn't save their lives. Maybe we could have said something better. Maybe we could have been more proactive. Maybe we could have provided a little bit better advice about, hey, you need to get this help, or, you know, you need to think about this problem differently, or it really is worth continuing to go on, or we'll help you find somebody that you can talk to.
But you already said it's okay for the machine to steer people toward suicide if they're terminally ill, so you wouldn't feel bad about that.
Do you not think there's a difference between a depressed teenager and a terminally ill, like, miserable 85-year-old with cancer?
Massive difference. But of course, the countries that have legalized suicide are now killing people for destitution, inadequate housing, depression, solvable problems, and they're being killed by the thousands. So, I mean, that's a real thing. It's happening as we speak. So the terminally ill thing is not, it's kind of like a irrelevant debate. Once you say it's okay to kill yourself, then you're going to have tons of people killing themselves for reasons that...
I'm trying to think about this in real time, do you think if someone in Canada says, hey, I'm terminally ill with cancer and I'm really miserable and I just feel horrible every day, what are my options? Do you think it should say, you know, assist, whatever they call it at this point, is an option for you?
I mean, if we're against killing, then we're against killing. And if we're against government killing its own citizens, then we're just going to kind of stick with that. You know what I mean? And if we're not against government killing its own citizens, then we could easily talk ourselves into all kinds of places that are pretty dark. And with technology like this, that could happen in about 10 minutes. So.
Yeah. I'd like to think about that more than just a couple of minutes in an interview, but I think that is a coherent position, and that could be.
Do you worry about this? I mean, everybody else outside the building is terrified that this technology will be used as a means of totalitarian control. It seems obvious that it will, but maybe you disagree?
If I could get one piece of policy passed right now, relative to AI, the thing I would most like, and this is in tension with some of the other things that we've talked about, is I'd like there to...
With the unsettling implications of technology and governance lingering in the air, the conversation shifts to a perplexing incident that raises more questions than answers, diving into the complexities of a tragic event.
I'm confused. This
okay,
is like,
okay, so I'm not reaching, I'm not being crazy here.
Well,
at all.
But then after the second thing came out and the more detail, I was like, okay.
What changed your mind?
The second report on the way the bullet entered him and the sort of person who had like followed the sort of likely path of things through the room. I assume you looked at this too.
Yes, I did.
And what about that didn't change your mind?
It just didn't make any sense to me. Why would the security camera wires be cut? And how did he wind up bleeding in two rooms after shooting himself? And why was there a wig in the room that wasn't his? And has there ever been a suicide where there's no indication at all that the person was suicidal who just ordered takeout food? I mean, who orders DoorDash and then shoots himself? I mean, maybe. I've covered a lot of crimes as a police reporter. I've never heard of anything like that. So no, I was even more confused.
This is where it gets into, I think, a little bit painful, just not the level of respect I'd hope to show to someone with this kind of mental
illness. I totally get it.
It's people just do commit suicide without notes a lot. Like that happens.
For sure.
People definitely order food they like before they commit suicide. Like this is an incredible tragedy.
That's his family's view. And they think it was a murder. And that's why I'm asking the question.
If I were his family, I am sure I would want answers. And I'm sure I would not be satisfied with really any. I mean, there's nothing that would comfort me in that, you know?
Right.
Like, so I get it. I also care a lot about respect to him.
Right. I have to ask your version of Elon Musk has like attacked you and all this. What is the core of that dispute from your perspective?
Look, I know he's a friend of yours and I know what side you'll be
on. I actually don't have a position on this because I don't understand it well enough to understand.
He helped us start OpenAI.
Yes.
I'm very grateful for that. I really, for a long time, looked up to him as just an incredible hero and, you know, great jewel of humanity. I have different feelings now.
What are your feelings now? No longer a jewel of humanity?
There are things about him that are incredible, and I'm grateful for a lot of things he's done. There's a lot of things about him that I think are traits I don't admire. Anyway, he helped us start OpenAI, and he later decided that we weren't on a trajectory to be successful, and he didn't want to, you know, he kind of told us we had a 0% chance of success, and he was going to go do his competitive thing, and then we did okay. And I think he got understandably upset. Like, I'd feel bad in that situation. And since then has just sort of been trying to, he runs a competitive kind of clone and has been trying to sort of slow us down and sue us and do this and that. And that's kind of my version of it. I'm sure you'd have a different one.
You don't talk to him anymore?
Very little.
If AI becomes smarter, I think it already probably is smarter than any person, and if it becomes wiser, if we can agree that it reaches better decisions than people, then it, by definition, kind of displaces people at the center of the world, right?
I don't think it'll feel like that at all. I think it'll feel like a, you know, really smart computer that may advise us, and we listen to it sometimes, we ignore it sometimes. It won't, I don't think it'll feel like agency. I don't think it'll diminish our sense of agency. People are already using ChatGPT in a way where many of them would say it's much smarter than me at almost everything. But they're still making the decisions. They're still deciding what to ask, what to listen to, what not. And I think this is sort of just the shape of technology.
Who loses their jobs because of this technology?
I'll caveat this with the obvious but important statement that no one can predict the future.
Right. I agree.
I will. And if I try to answer that precisely, I will say like a lot of dumb things, but I'll try to pick an area that I'm confident about and then areas that I'm much less confident about. I'm confident that a lot of current customer support that happens over a phone or computer, those people will lose their jobs and that'll be better done by an AI. Now, there may be other kinds of customer support where you really want to know it's the right person. A job that I'm confident will not be that impacted is like nurses. I think people really want the deep human connection with a person in that time. And no matter how good the advice of the AI is or the robot or whatever, like, you'll really want that. A job that I feel like way less certain about what the future looks like for is computer programmers. What it means to be a computer programmer today is very different than what it meant 2 years ago. You're able to use these AI tools to just be hugely more productive. But it's still a person there, and they're like able to generate way more code, make way more money than ever before. And it turns out that the world wanted so much more software than the world previously had capacity to create, that there's just incredible demand overhang. But if we fast forward another 5 or 10 years, what does that look like? Is it more jobs or less? That one I'm uncertain on.
But there's going to be massive displacement, and maybe those people will find something new and interesting and, you know, lucrative to do. But how big is that displacement, do you think?
Someone told me recently that the historical average is about 50% of jobs significantly change. Maybe they don't totally go away, but significantly change every 75 years on average. That's the kind of, the half-life of the stuff. And my controversial take would be that this is going to be like a punctuated equilibrium moment where a lot of that will happen in a short period of time. But if we zoom out, it's not going to be dramatically different than the historical rate. Like we'll have a lot in this short period of time, and then it'll somehow be less total job turnover than we think. There will still be a job that is, there will be some totally new categories, like my job, like, you know, running a tech company, it would have been hard to think about 200 years ago. But there's a lot of other jobs that are directionally similar to jobs that did exist 200 years ago, and there's jobs that were common 200 years ago that now aren't. And if we, again, I have no idea if this is true or not, but I'll use the number for the sake of argument. If we assume it's 50% turnover every 75 years, then I could totally believe a world where 75 years from now, half the people are doing something totally new, and half the people are doing something that looks kind of like some jobs of today.
Last time we had an industrial revolution, there was like revolution and world wars. Do you think we'll see that this time?
Again, no one knows for sure. I'm not confident on this answer, but my instinct is the world is so much richer now than it was at the time of the Industrial Revolution that we can actually absorb more change faster than we could. I think we're already, unfortunately, in society in a pretty bad place there. I'm not sure how much worse it can get. I'm sure it can, but I have been pleasantly surprised on the ability of people to pretty quickly adapt to big changes. Like COVID was an interesting example to me of this, where the world kind of stopped all at once. And the world was like very different from one week to the next.
That's it for today. Got a podcast? Head over to podsummarizer.xyz and start summarizing it in seconds. See you there.